The laughter rippled around her like cold water, but Lillian Ainsworth, Duchess of Ashcombe, did not flinch. She had learned to stand very still while her heart broke. It was a skill she had perfected over the 18 months of her marriage, a quiet art of smiling when she wanted to weep, of breathing evenly when every breath felt like swallowing glass. Tonight, in the glittering ballroom of Lord and Lady Haverford's London mansion, that skill was being tested to its absolute limit. Her husband, Alexander Ashcombe, the Duke of Ashcombe, was dancing with Lady Clarissa Devereux. Again, it was the third time this evening. Society had noticed. The whispers had started the moment he had led the beautiful young widow onto the floor for the first waltz, and they had grown louder with each subsequent dance. Lillian stood near a towering arrangement of hothouse roses, her gloved hands clasped lightly in front of her, her expression serene. Inside, she was crumbling. "Such a handsome couple," murmured a voice behind her, deliberately pitched to Carrie. "The Duke and Lady Clarissa. One almost forgets he has a wife at all." Lillian did not turn around. She did not need to see the speaker's face to feel the sting. She kept her gaze fixed on the dancers, on her husband's dark head bent attentively toward Lady Clarissa's golden curls, on the easy, charming smile that curved his lips. It was a smile Lillian had never once seen directed at herself. She had received courtesy, cold politeness, the distant respect a man might show a stranger, but never warmth, never that smile. When the music finally ended, Alexander escorted Lady Clarissa back to her circle of friends, his hand resting lightly at her elbow. He did not look for his wife. He did not cross the room to stand beside her, to offer her a glass of champagne, to ask if she was enjoying the evening. He simply turned away and began a low, intimate conversation with Lady Clarissa, their heads closed together, her laughter floating across the room like a private melody. Lillian felt the last fragile ember of hope inside her chest flicker and die. She had been so foolish. When her father, the Earl of Marchwood, had told her of the Duke's proposal, she had been stunned. The Ashcombe dukedom was old and powerful, and their own family, though respected, was impoverished. The marriage was a spectacular match, a union that would save her family from ruin and elevate her to the highest ranks of society. Her father had wept with relief. Lillian had dared to dream of affection, of partnership, of a love that might grow from duty. She had stepped into Ashcombe Hall as a bride with a heart full of trembling hope. She had learned the truth within a week. Alexander had married her because his father's will had demanded an heir by his 35th year, and he had needed a wife of good breeding and unblemished reputation. She was convenient. She was suitable. She was, in his eyes, nothing more than a means to an end. The discovery had devastated her, but she had refused to surrender to despair. She had told herself that patience and gentleness might soften him, that if she could only show him how much she cared, he might one day care in return. She had tried so very hard, and she had failed completely. At Haverford House, Lillian waited another hour before she quietly requested her carriage. She did not interrupt her husband's conversation. She simply slipped away, unseen and unmissed. The ride back to Ashcombe Hall was silent and dark, and in the swaying shadows of the carriage, she finally allowed the tears to fall. They were not violent sobs. They were the quiet, exhausted tears of a woman who had finally accepted a painful truth. She was not loved. She would never be loved. And it was time to stop breaking her own heart against the unyielding stone of her husband's indifference. The first months of their marriage had been a slow, torturous unraveling of her hopes. Ashcombe Hall was magnificent, a vast estate of gray stone and sweeping parkland, but it felt like a mausoleum. Alexander was rarely present, and when he was, he treated her with a formal courtesy that felt more wounding than outright cruelty would have been. He dined with her when protocol demanded, made stilted conversation about the weather and the estate accounts, and then retreated to his study or his club in London. He never sought her out. He never asked about her day, her thoughts, her dreams. She was a ghost in her own home. Lillian, desperate to bridge the chasm between them, had tried everything a gentle heart could devise. She learned his favorite dishes and instructed the cook to prepare them. He ate without comment. She filled his study with fresh flowers from the garden. He did not seem to notice. She attempted to engage him in conversation about his interests, horse breeding, agricultural reform, the political debates in the House of Lords. He answered in monosyllables, his eyes distant, his attention clearly elsewhere. Once, she had gathered all her courage and placed her hand over his as they sat in the drawing room after dinner. He had looked down at her fingers as if they were an inconvenience, then gently but firmly withdrawn his hand and excused himself. She had sat alone in the firelight for a long time after that, her hand still outstretched, empty. The turning point, the moment the last petal of hope fell, came on a cold November evening 3 months before the Haverford ball. Lillian had planned a private supper, just the two of them, in the small, intimate dining parlor she had redecorated to feel warmer and less formal. She had worn a new gown, a soft rose silk that the modiste had assured her brought color to her cheeks. She had dismissed the servants, determined to create an atmosphere of quiet intimacy. She waited and waited. Alexander did not come. He had forgotten, or perhaps he had never registered the invitation she had shyly extended that morning. She found him later in his study, deep in conversation with his steward, and when she gently reminded him of the supper, he looked at her with blank incomprehension. "My apologies, Your Grace," he said, the title cold and formal on his lips. "I had pressing matters to attend to. Perhaps another time." There was never another time. The humiliation of that evening was a small, private thing compared to what came later, but it cut deeper than any public slight. It was the final confirmation that she did not matter, that her efforts were invisible, that her husband simply did not care whether she lived or breathed in the same house as him. After that night, something inside Lillian began to change. The vibrant, hopeful girl who had arrived at Ashcombe Hall full of dreams slowly began to retreat. In her place emerged a woman of quiet dignity, a duchess who performed her duties with flawless grace but whose heart was locked carefully away, protected behind walls she had built herself. The public humiliations continued, but she no longer allowed them to wound her so deeply. When Alexander escorted Lady Clarissa Devereux to the opera, and the gossip columns speculated openly about his affections, Lillian smiled and said nothing. When she overheard him telling a friend at a garden party that his marriage was a perfectly amiable arrangement, nothing more, she absorbed the blow without flinching. She had stopped expecting warmth from Stone. She had stopped hopping for love. Instead, she began to pour her energies into the one area of her life where she could make a tangible difference, the Ashcombe estate and its people. It started with small acts of kindness. She visited the tenants' cottages, learning their names, listening to their struggles. She discovered that many of the children were unable to attend school because the nearest one was miles away and their families needed them to work. Quietly, without seeking her husband's permission or approval, Lillian arranged for a schoolroom to be set up in an unused wing of the estate's West Lodge. She hired a gentle, educated young woman from the village to teach reading, writing, and simple arithmetic 3 days a week. She paid for it herself, using the small personal allowance her father had managed to scrape together for her. The children began to come. Their mothers, grateful and astonished, started to see the young duchess not as a distant, untouchable figure, but as a friend. Lillian found more joy in those dusty, noisy schoolroom hours than she had ever found in a London ballroom. She helped a tenant's wife nurse a sick baby through a fever. She taught a young girl how to stitch a straight seam. She sat with an elderly farmer as he spoke of losing his wife, and she held his weathered hand while he wept. In giving comfort to others, she found a flicker of purpose that her marriage had never provided. The transformation did not go unnoticed by the household staff. Though it entirely escaped the Duke's attention at first, Mrs. Hartley, the housekeeper who had served Ashcombe Hall for 30 years, watched the young duchess with growing respect and a deep, private sorrow. She saw the way the Duke looked past his wife, the way the duchess's light had dimmed. She saw, too, the quiet strength that was taking its place. One afternoon, as Lillian returned from the lodge, her cheeks flushed from the cold and her arms full of wildflowers the children had picked for her, Mrs. Hartley dared to speak. "You're doing good work, Your Grace," she said, her voice gruff with emotion. "The tenants have never had such kindness from the great house. It matters. You matter." Lillian paused, surprised by the directness. She looked at the elderly housekeeper and saw genuine warmth in her eyes. For the first time in months, she felt seen. "Thank you, Mrs. Hartley," she said softly. "It gives me a reason to wake up in the morning." The housekeeper's eyes glistened. She curtsied deeply and hurried away before she could say something improper about the master of the house. But from that day forward, the staff's loyalty to Lillian was absolute. They saw what the Duke did not. They saw a lady of grace and compassion being slowly starved of the love she deserved. The arrival of Lord William Pemberton at a neighboring estate gathering was the catalyst that finally drew the Duke's attention, not to his wife's heart, but to her absence from his orbit. Lord Pemberton was a gentleman of quiet intellect, a widower with a passion for botany and a gentle, self-deprecating humor. He was not strikingly handsome like Alexander, but he had kind eyes and an attentive manner that made people feel truly heard. When he was introduced to Lillian at a local assembly, he listened to her speak about her school project with genuine interest. He asked thoughtful questions. He offered to donate a collection of botanical prints for the children to study. He treated her not as a duchess, but as a woman of intelligence and worth. For the first time in over a year, Lillian found herself engaged in a conversation that sparked her mind. She laughed at a small jest he made. She felt the unfamiliar warmth of being appreciated. It was nothing improper, nothing romantic, merely the simple pleasure of being treated as an equal. But Alexander, standing across the room in conversation with the local magistrate, happened to glance over at that exact moment. He saw his wife's face alight with animation. He saw Lord Pemberton leaning slightly toward her, his expression one of focused attention, and something hot and unfamiliar twisted in Alexander's chest. He did not recognize it at first. He had spent so many years suppressing every emotion that he had forgotten what they felt like. But the sensation was sharp and immediate, a clenching of his jaw, a narrowing of his eyes, a sudden, irrational desire to cross the room and insert himself between his wife and this unknown gentleman. He did not act on it. He forced himself to turn back to the magistrate to continue the conversation about drainage ditches and crop rotation. But his focus was shattered. He kept stealing glances at Lillian, watching the easy way she smiled, the way her hands gestured gracefully as she spoke. He could not remember the last time she had smiled at him like that. He could not remember the last time he had given her a reason to. That night back at Ashcombe Hall, Alexander found himself restless. He paced the library, a glass of brandy untouched in his hand. He told himself his irritation was merely a matter of propriety. It was unseemly for a duchess to be so familiar with a stranger. It could cause talk. He was simply concerned for the family's reputation. But the excuse rang hollow even in his own mind. The truth, which he was not yet ready to acknowledge, was far simpler and far more terrifying. He had seen another man look at his wife with admiration, and he had been jealous. The following weeks were a slow, torturous awakening for the Duke. He began, almost unconsciously, to observe Lillian. He noticed the way she moved through the house with a quiet confidence that had not been there before. He noticed that she no longer sought him out for conversation, no longer appeared in his study doorway with tentative offers of tea or company. She was busy, occupied with her own pursuits, and she seemed utterly at peace with the distance between them. The realization unsettled him profoundly. He had grown accustomed to her quiet presence, her hopeful glances, her gentle attempts to reach him. He had taken them for granted, assuming they would always be there. Now that they were gone, the silence felt deafening. He tried, in his own awkward, emotionally stunted way, to bridge the gap. One evening, he made a point of joining her in the drawing room after dinner instead of retreating to his study. She looked up from her embroidery with mild surprise but no visible pleasure. "Your Grace," she said politely, inclining her head. The title, once a formality he had insisted upon, now felt like a slap. He sat down across from her, searching for words. I understand you have been occupied with charitable work among the tenants, he said, his voice stiff. The schoolroom. Yes, she replied, her needle moving steadily through the fabric. The children are progressing well. That is commendable, he managed. She did not look up. Thank you. The silence stretched between them, heavy and awkward. In the past, she would have filled it with gentle chatter, drawing him out, trying to engage him. Now she simply continued her embroidery, her expression serene and utterly closed to him. Alexander felt a pang of something that might have been loss. He did not know how to reach her. He had never learned. He sat for another quarter of an hour, a statue of discomfort, before finally excusing himself. Lillian bade him good night with the same distant courtesy she might offer a visiting acquaintance. When the door closed behind him, she allowed herself a single, shuddering breath. His sudden attention was confusing, unsettling. She had hardened her heart to protect it, and she did not trust this new, tentative interest. It felt like a trap. She would not be heard again. A few days later, Alexander encountered Lord Pemberton on the estate's boundary lane. The gentleman was on horseback, a portfolio of botanical sketches tucked under his arm. He greeted the Duke with easy friendliness and explained that he was on his way to deliver the promised prints to Her Grace for the schoolroom. Alexander's jaw tightened. The familiarity of the errand, the casual assumption of access to his wife, grated on him. Her Grace is occupied this afternoon, Alexander heard himself say, the lie smooth and cold. I will ensure she receives them. Lord Pemberton's eyebrows rose slightly, but he handed over the portfolio without argument. Do tell Her Grace I hope the children enjoy them, he said, his tone impeccably polite. But there was a knowing glint in his eye, a silent acknowledgement of the Duke's territorial behavior. Alexander felt a flush of heat rise up his neck. He was acting like a jealous schoolboy, and he despised himself for it. He carried the portfolio back to the hall, but he did not give it to Lillian immediately. He took it to his study and set it on his desk, staring at it as if it were an enemy. Later, alone, he opened it. The prints were exquisite, delicate watercolors of native wildflowers, each carefully labeled. Tucked inside the front cover was a small, handwritten note from Lord Pemberton to Lillian. It was brief, simply thanking her for a pleasant conversation and expressing admiration for her dedication. The words were entirely proper, but Alexander read them three times, each time feeling the sharp twist of jealousy more intensely. He had never written his wife a note. He had never thanked her for anything. He had never admired her aloud. He closed the portfolio and pressed his fingers to his temples. What was happening to him? He had married for duty, for an heir, for the cold requirements of his station. He had built his life on control and restraint, on never allowing emotion to cloud his judgment. His own father had been a man of reckless passions, a man whose affairs had destroyed his mother's spirit and plunged their family into scandal and misery. Alexander had sworn, as a young man watching his mother fade into a wraith of sorrow, that he would never allow himself to feel deeply. Love was a weakness, a madness, a path to ruin. He had married Lillian with the firm intention of keeping her at a safe distance, of ensuring she would never have the power to wound him as his mother had been wounded. But somewhere in the quiet moments he had never acknowledged, she had begun to matter. Her absence from his side felt wrong. Her laughter, directed at another man, had been a physical blow. The thought of her indifference was a cold hand squeezing his heart. He was terrified. The breaking point came on a stormy night in late autumn, when the wind howled around the ancient stones of Ashcombe Hall and rain lashed the windows. Lillian had been out visiting a tenant family whose youngest child was ill. She had stayed far longer than she intended, and she returned soaked and shivering, her cloak dripping, her hair plastered to her pale cheeks. Alexander, who had been packing the entrance hall for an hour, consumed by an anxiety he could not name, saw her stumble through the door and felt a surge of raw, protective fury. "Where have you been?" he demanded, his voice sharper than he intended. He strode toward her, his boots echoing on the marble floor. "You have been gone for hours. No escort, no word. Do you have any idea the danger you could have been in? Lillian, exhausted and trembling with cold, looked up at him with weary eyes. I was at the Miller's cottage. Their baby was burning with fever. I sent word hours ago. I assume your secretary did not inform you. She stepped back, away from his looming presence. I am perfectly fine. I do not require your concern. The dismissal was like ice. Alexander felt it down to his bones. You are my wife, he said, his voice dropping, rough with an emotion he could not control. Of course I am concerned. She laughed, a soft, bitter sound that broke something inside him. Am I? I have been your duchess, your grace. I have been a signature on your marriage contract, a hostess for your dinner parties, a silent partner in your household. But I have never truly been your wife. You made that very clear. She pulled her wet cloak tighter around her shoulders. Now, if you will excuse me, I am cold and I wish to go to my room. She turned away and began to climb the stairs, her slender figure bowed with fatigue. Alexander stood frozen in the hall, the sound of her footsteps fading into the darkness above. Her words echoed in his mind, each one a lash. She was right. He had treated her as a duty, a convenience, a ghost, and now he was losing her. The realization was a chasm opening beneath his feet. He did not sleep that night. He sat in his study, staring into the dying fire, the portfolio of botanical prints on the desk beside him a silent accusation. He thought of his mother, of her pale, patient face, of the way she had withered under his father's neglect. He had become the very thing he had sworn to despise. He had taken a bright, hopeful young woman and slowly extinguished her light. The guilt was a physical pain in his chest. He thought of Lillian's smile, the one he had seen her give Lord Pemberton, and he wanted, with a desperation that shook him, to be the one who made her smile like that. But he did not know how. He had spent so long building walls that he had forgotten the way out. The next morning he went looking for her, determined to apologize to begin the long, uncertain work of mending what he had broken. He found her not in the drawing room or the morning parlor, but in the West Lodge, surrounded by children, her sleeves rolled up, helping a small boy trace letters on a slate. She looked up when he appeared in the doorway, and her expression shuddered instantly. The children fell silent, staring at the imposing Duke with wide, frightened eyes. Your Grace, Lillian said, her voice carefully neutral, is something amiss. He felt like an intruder in his own world. I wish to speak with you, he said, his voice hoarse, privately. She excused herself and stepped outside with him, pulling her shawl around her shoulders. In the gray morning light, she looked delicate but unyielding, like a stem of willow that bends but does not break. He searched for words, the words he had rehearsed through the sleepless night, but they all felt inadequate, too small for the enormity of his failure. Lillian, he began, and the use of her name, so rarely spoken, made her eyes widen slightly. I owe you an apology. More than an apology, I have been, he stopped, struggling. I have been blind and cold and unforgivably distant. I have not been the husband you deserved. She watched him without speaking, her face unreadable. There was no rush of grateful tears, no softening of her posture. She simply waited. The silence stretched, and Alexander felt the full weight of her mistrust. She did not believe him. Why should she? He had given her no reason. I want to do better, he pressed on, desperation creeping into his voice. I need you to know that I regret my behavior, deeply. Lillian studied him for a long moment. Why now? She asked quietly. What has changed? He could not lie, not to those clear, searching eyes. I saw you with Lord Pemberton, he admitted, the words tasting bitter and shameful on his tongue. And I realized I could not bear to lose your attention. You're your warmth. I know that sounds selfish. It is selfish, but it is the truth. She closed her eyes for a moment, and when she opened them again, there was a profound sadness in their depths. You do not miss me, she said softly. You miss the comfort of being admired. You miss the convenience of a wife who tried to love you. But you do not love me, Alexander. You never have. And I cannot build my life on the hope that one day you might learn to tolerate my presence. Her voice trembled, but she held herself steady. I am tired. I have given you everything I had, and there is nothing left. I cannot keep waiting for a love that will never come. She turned and walked back into the schoolroom, closing the door gently behind her. Alexander stood motionless in the courtyard, the wind biting through his coat. Her words had been quiet, but they had landed with the force of a hammer blow. She had stopped loving him. She had stopped hopping. And he had no one to blame but himself. The days that followed were a study in silent agony. Lillian remained perfectly composed, perfectly courteous, perfectly out of reach. She continued her work with the tenants, her visits to the schoolroom, her quiet management of the household. She dined with Alexander when required, made polite conversation, and excused herself early. She never sought him out. She never lingered. She was a stranger wearing his ring. The staff noticed the tension, the way the Duke's eyes followed the Duchess with a desperate, hungry look, the way she never looked back. Mrs. Hartley, observing from the sidelines, felt a grim satisfaction mingled with pity. The master was finally learning the cost of his coldness, but it might be too late. The emotional climax arrived with the force of a winter storm, on a night when the truth he had buried for so long was finally dragged into the light. Lillian had announced, with quiet finality, that she intended to travel to the family's dower house in Derbyshire for an extended stay. She framed it as a desire for country air and rest, but Alexander understood the unspoken message. She was leaving him. She was walking away from the hollow shell of their marriage, and she might not come back. He found her in the library, packing a small crate of books she wished to take with her. The room was dim, lit only by a single branch of candles. She looked up when he entered, and her expression was calm, resolved. She was not angry. She was not bitter. She was simply finished. "You cannot leave," he said, his voice cracking. All his careful control, his years of restraint, were unraveling. "Lillian, please, I know I have no right to ask anything of you, but I cannot let you go, not like this." She set down a volume of poetry and faced him squarely. "Why?" she asked, and the single word was a demand. "Give me one honest reason, not duty, not propriety, not the opinion of society. Give me one reason that comes from your heart." The silence that followed was the most terrifying of Alexander's life. He had spent decades hiding from his own emotions, burying them so deep that he had almost convinced himself they did not exist. But now, standing on the precipice of losing the one person who had ever truly tried to love him, he understood that if he did not speak the truth, he would be lost forever. He reached into the inner pocket of his coat and withdrew a small velvet pouch, worn with age. He did not hand it to her. He simply held it in his palm, his fingers trembling. "I have something I need to tell you," he said, his voice barely above a whisper. "Something I should have told you the day we married, something I was too afraid to say." Lillian watched him, her breath caught in her throat. There was something in his face she had never seen before, a raw, unguarded vulnerability that stripped away the cold mask. "Before I ever met your father to discuss the marriage contract," Alexander began, "I saw you. It was at a charity bazaar in Bath 3 years ago. You were kneeling in the mud, your gown ruined, helping a small boy who had fallen and cut his knee. You were not trying to impress anyone. There were no society matrons watching, no gentlemen to admire your grace. You were just kind, in that unthinking, genuine way that cannot be feigned. I watched you comfort that child, and I felt something I had never felt before, something I did not understand and did not want." He paused, his jaw tight. "I made inquiries. I learned who you were, that your family was struggling, that your father was facing ruin, and I saw a way to have you without ever having to risk my heart. I arranged the settlement, the payment of your father's debts, everything. I told myself it was a convenient match, a duty to my title, but it was a lie. I wanted you. I wanted you from the very first moment I saw you, and that terrified me." Lillian's hand had come up to cover her mouth. Her eyes were wide, shimmering. You paid my father's debts," she breathed. "We thought it was a distant relative, an anonymous benefactor." "It was me," Alexander said, his voice breaking. "I made sure you would never know. I did not want your gratitude. I did not want your obligation. I wanted. I don't know what I wanted. I think I wanted you to love me for myself, but I was too much of a coward to let you. I pushed you away because I was afraid. Afraid that if I let myself love you, I would become my father and I would destroy us both. He opened the velvet pouch and tipped its contents into his hand. It was a miniature portrait, a tiny oval of ivory painted with delicate, exquisite skill. The face looking up at them was her own, younger, caught in a moment of gentle laughter. I had this commissioned the week after I saw you in Bath. I have carried it with me every day since. Even when I was cruel to you, even when I was cold, I carried this next to my heart. You were never just a duty to me, Lillian. You were the dream I was too broken to reach for. The confession hung in the air, raw and aching. Lillian stared at the miniature, at the face she barely recognized because it was a face full of unguarded joy, a face she had not seen in a mirror for a very long time. Tears spilled over her cheeks, silent and hot. She looked up at her husband, at the man who had caused her so much pain, who had starved her heart and ignored her tears, and she saw him clearly for the first time. Not the cold Duke, not the distant stranger, but a man who had been so frightened of his own capacity to love that he had broken the very thing he most wanted to protect. "You should have told me," she whispered, her voice thick with sorrow. "All this time I thought I was nothing to you. I thought I was invisible." "I know," he said, and his own eyes were wet, a sight so unfamiliar it made her chest ache. "I know, and I will spend the rest of my life trying to earn your forgiveness if you will let me. I cannot undo what I have done, but I can promise you this." He took a step closer, still not touching her, his hands hanging at his sides as if he did not feel worthy to reach for her. "I love you. I have loved you since before I had the right to, and I will love you until the day I die. Please, Lillian. Don't leave me. Give me one more chance to be the husband you deserved from the start." The library was utterly silent except for the crackle of the fire and the soft sound of her tears. Lillian looked at the miniature in his hand, at the evidence of a love she had never known existed, hidden beneath layers of fear and silence. She thought of the years of loneliness, the nights she had cried herself to sleep, the slow death of her hope. The pain was still there, sharp and real, but beneath it something else was stirring. Something that felt dangerously like hope reborn. She reached out not for the miniature but for his hand. Her fingers, cold and trembling, closed around his. "I am so very tired of being alone," she said, her voice breaking. "I have been alone in this marriage since the day it began. If you truly mean what you say, if you are willing to let me in, truly in, then I am willing to try. But Alexander, I cannot go back to the way things were. I will not be your ghost again." He fell to his knees there on the library floor and pressed her hand to his lips. It was an act of complete surrender, the proud Duke humbling himself before the woman he had wounded. "I swear to you," he said, his voice muffled against her skin, "I will tear down every wall. I will spend every day showing you the love I should have shown you from the beginning. You will never be invisible again. You will be my first thought in the morning and my last thought at night. You will be my partner, my equal, my dearest friend. I will earn your trust back, Lillian, if it takes me a lifetime." She looked down at his bent head, at the broad shoulders shaking with silent emotion, and she felt the ice around her heart begin to thaw. It was not a sudden, dramatic melt. It was a slow, cautious softening, the first trickle of water after a long winter. She did not trust him fully yet. That would take time. But she believed, for the first time in a very long time, that he was telling the truth, and that was enough to begin. The weeks that followed were not a fairy tale. There was no instant, magical transformation. Healing was a slow, delicate process, full of awkward conversations and tentative gestures. Alexander kept his word. He tore down the walls, one painful brick at a time. He told her about his mother, about the long, agonizing years of watching her fade under his father's indifference. He confessed his deepest fear, that he was incapable of love without destruction. He let her see his grief, his guilt, his desperate hope. And Lillian, in turn, allowed herself to be vulnerable again. She did not offer her trust freely, but she offered him a chance. She let him join her on her visits to the tenants. She allowed him to sit beside her in the evenings and read aloud while she embroidered. She let him take her hand when they walked through the gardens, and she did not pull away. Slowly the awkwardness faded. They learn to talk to each other, truly talk, about their hopes and their fears and the small, everyday details of their lives. He learned to make her laugh, a low, surprised sound that lit up her whole face. She learned to read the subtle shifts in his expression, to know when he was troubled and needed her quiet presence. The cold formality that had defined their marriage dissolved, replaced by a deepening warmth that filled the great, echoing halls of Ashcombe Hall with something it had long lacked, the quiet music of affection. One evening, as they stood together on the terrace watching the sunset paint the sky in shades of rose and gold, Alexander turned to her. The miniature portrait was in his hand, as it so often was. He held it up beside her face, a playful smile curving his lips. "You are even more beautiful now," he said softly. "Time has only deepened your light." Lillian laughed, a sound of genuine, unguarded joy. "You are becoming quite the flatterer, Your Grace." "I am merely stating a fact." He tucked the miniature back into his pocket, close to his heart, and reached for her hand. "I wasted so much time. I will never waste another moment." She leaned into his side, feeling the solid warmth of him, the steady beat of his heart beneath her cheek. The pain of the past was still there, a scar that would never fully disappear, but it no longer defined her. She had found strength in herself first, and then she had found the courage to let him back in. It was not the love story she had dreamed of as a girl. It was messier, harder, and far more real. But as she stood there in the fading light, wrapped in the arms of the man who had once been a stranger, she knew it was her story. And for the first time, it felt like a happy one. In the end, Alexander Ashcombe, the cold duke who had married for duty, discovered that love was not a weakness. It was not a threat to his carefully constructed control. It was the only thing that had ever truly mattered. And Lillian, the invisible duchess, learned that sometimes the deepest love grows not from perfect beginnings, but from the broken places where two wounded hearts choose to heal together. The grand halls of Ashcombe Hall were no longer silent. They echoed with laughter, with whispered confidences in the dark, with the gentle rhythm of a marriage finally, truly alive. And the portrait of a laughing girl, carried for years next to a lonely heart, found its proper place. On the mantle of their shared bedroom, a daily reminder that love, however late it arrives, is always worth the wait. If you enjoyed this story, don't forget to give it a like and subscribe to the channel. Also, let us know in the comments which country you're watching from. Your support means a lot to us. Thank you for watching, and see you in the next amazing story.